Welcome to the Nature-backed podcast of Single Earth. In this series, we are talking with investors about their vision of the new green world. My name is Tarmo Virki, and in this episode 7, I'm talking with Hampus Jakobsson from Pale Blue Dot on how investors and startups can keep the Pale Blue Dot alive. Enjoy the show. Hampus, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's obvious where Pale Dot Blue got its name from that famous photo of planet Earth from 6 billion kilometers away. But tell us a bit about the background. How did you guys come up with founding Pale Blue Dot?
I mean, the background was that Heidi, Ewell, and myself, the three GPs and co-founders, we were working with other kinds of structured firms. Heidi Ewell ran a microfund and accelerator, and I was at a deep tech firm in Berlin. And the firm I was at did a lot of stuff in like fusion and clean meat, but not with a thesis of climate, but with a thesis about future and decentralization. And then Heidi Newell's fund had a very strong ESG focus, but not like an like outspoken measured ESG and not like on climate. And I was in the investor committee of that fund. So what happened is essentially we had like this weekly meeting and lunch meeting where we just started talking about this is 2019 in February. We just started talking about the climate situation in the world and how we felt that we wanted to spend more time on it and how what one could do and what was the role of venture. And I think that we had a doubt that we were asking, like, is climate one of those things where venture should avoid it actually? Like, mm-hmm. Is it something that like it's venture compatible or not? Because what's the conversation? Mm-hmm. And I think it's very easy to like, now in hindsight, it might feel a bit silly, like, oh, is venture compatible? But I actually think that back then it was very legit. It was like, you know, if you think about, like, you know, can we create nuclear energy production, whatever, or can we transform any of these industries? I just feel like venture is usually not super good for transforming these things. It's like very short term. It's very digitalized. It's not really for these things. And then what happened was like we prototyped and built the climate event in Berlin, which was really kind of the who's who of like some of the most amazing climate people, both within like science, like the one of the founders of IPCC was there, and like some of the head researchers, but also some super interesting startups and like around the table, like all of the kinds of people. And I think what was so interesting was that when we doing that, it was so clear that there were just so many kind of quote unquote investable companies. Like mm-hmm. we just started looking at this, like, and I think it's like, at least for myself, is like, I always try to like my natural state is like, I'm sitting with a cup of decaf tea and reading a fiction book. And that's what I'm going to do. And I don't want to do anything about that. Like, I really don't want to do anything about that. So like whenever somebody says somebody should fix that venture can do climate, whatever, then I'm just trying to get someone else to do it. So I'm just essentially making it super easy. It's like at doing this event, I just like, let's get some VCs in the room. Let's get them to understand this. Let's get them to invest in it. And I can get back to my fiction books and my tea. Mm-hmm. And then essentially like after the event, I was like talking to Bluebird where I worked. I'm like, what do you think? I'm like, this is amazing. This is the future. It's like, yeah, like come to the companies. And we talked about, like, yeah, but can we invest in that? And what do you mean? And then another, like a couple of funds that I invited, and all of them were like, yeah, I didn't really understand like how methane works, or I don't understand like what's the difference between deforestation and afforestation. And like, you know, and I realized, like, this is not that hard, is it? And then I started realizing that venture people tend to be like this kind of, they were the kids in high school that played poker, and the people who like science are the people who sat in the front of the class and took all the notes. And I was like, and then the two never met, right? And I kind of was like, it's a joke a bit, right? Because they're both camps, of course. But it was just realizing, oh my god, like actually this is maybe the complicated thing in venture, because we have these venture funds that do these like extremely complex science things, and like for example in medical, but the venture community don't even consider the venture funds. They're like a very particular kind of biotech funds and stuff. And then we have like the venture funds, and the venture funds loves that kind of like, oh, can we get like fast food delivery and like Korean cosmetics sold in Berlin, and like, you know, nobody needs this shit. And it's like the mentality is very different. So we were just like, Bluebird where I were in Berlin was not that. Bluebird was like very, very thoughtful, but still had problems of grappling with climate. So then in my laziness, I was like, can we get something else to do it? It felt like the three of us were sitting there realizing, damn, like, it seems like it's so hard to get people to do it. So then we essentially said, let's prototype thinking about building a fund. And we didn't know, like, we're going to do a $10 million fund, a $20 million fund, maybe $40 million fund, maybe like a $50 million fund. But like, how much is there to do, and what, like, who would be interested in investing? So essentially, October 2019, we said, okay, let's go and try to raise a fund. And Pivotal is a $100 million fund. And I would say that 2019, if you asked Americans, they said, like, I would say 30% said, I'm not sure climate change is real. And if it's real, I'm not sure it's man-made. Blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I would say 50% said, I know it's real, but I don't think you can make money on it because we burned ourselves on, you know, clean tech. And in Europe, people were like, I think it's really great, but I really don't think one should, like, you know, put capitalism and climate together. That was 2019. And so, but January, February 2020, like, you know, started fundraising down in October. In January, February, then suddenly, like, I don't know what happened in the world, but just like the world just completely changed. And like, we had Americans who were just like, hey, can we be in part of your fund? And they still said, I'm not sure you can multiply money, but like, we're happy to dedicate some money. And the Europeans said, like, I think we're going to multiply money and I think it's going to be great. We don't know, like, not completely sure that capitalism is going to play a, like, a fair beneficial role in this, but like, we're happy to bet. And then during that year, it was super clear that it was like everybody coalesced and realized that there is a role for, like, what I would say is transformative capital. So I think there's so much money going into, if you have hundreds of millions of revenue company, and you want to add another, you know, 50 million in from anybody, and you're doing something which is great for the world, you open the doors and you get the money. Like, either you get it from a government or you get it from a family office, like, hey, Bill Gates, hey, Norwegian government, hey, big private equity company. They're all like, hey, give them money. And they can say, it's great, or recycling school books or whatever. They're just like, it's great. They want to, like, they think it's a great story. But if you're going out there and saying, I have a pretty madness idea and I would like to have like €1 million, people are just like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to spend that much time for €1 million. It's too much, like, too much thinking. I don't understand this problem. I don't want to think about it. So we kind of felt this crazy gap in the market where essentially the three of us have always played. Mm. Like, we've always been we've started quite a lot of companies ourselves. And I think that we end up enjoying the ambiguity part. Like, we love the part where, like, of course, the science and, like, the facts have to check out. We can't say that we're going to remove gravity. But, like, if we look at it, it's like, I actually can't see why it wouldn't work. Like, it sounds like this would work. Then it feels like, well, then shouldn't somebody do it kind of level. And then I think for us, it's like, jokingly, sometimes it's like founder multiplied by market. So, like, for us, it is like, are these people amazing? Is the problem really big? And of course, are we defying rules of gravity or science? Mm-hmm. And if those three are true, then it's kind of what we need. Like, I'm playing it lightly here, of course, like, we like metrics and stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if somebody says, hey, we're going to, you know, be able to build electric airplanes or whatever, we're going to be able to suck down carbon from the sky. And like, we look through this and it's like, this looks like it should work, right? Then we're fairly game. Mm-hmm. And that feels like that was a pretty rare quote unquote product for founders. And I think that the other thing we did, which I think is interesting that we hadn't really realized, is that in Europe, it's very, very rare to have founder led firms, like venture firms where the people are startup founders. So one thing that we found so nice is that a lot of founders really like the fact that when we come in, we're not like maybe capital allocators as people. Like, we're in your shoes. We say like, hey, we'd love to work with you. And we think actually, part of it's just like, it's very fun to work with you because like, we would love to kind of be entrepreneurs without having to be entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So I think it's such a great thing that we get to do those things. And I think that we originally thought that maybe wouldn't be such a relevant thing for the entrepreneurs, but we've realized now that that is such a like enormous, unique selling point that the entrepreneurs love having an entrepreneur to talk to every day. So like, that's like, that. Mm-hmm. So that's us. Mm-hmm.
So you said there was a kind of major shift in around you in January, February 2020. Of course, that was roughly the same time when Corona kicked in.
Yeah, exactly. Corona came, actually. Yeah, Corona came, I would say, like, yeah, truly, like, that actually when it kicked in. But I think mentality shift, there was a second shift during COVID, which I think was somewhere there in August, September, I think it was that year, when people went from, it's not the bubonic plague. Like, I think there was a first period when people were like, I think we might all die and we're building a bunker and we're going to New Zealand level, where people were just like totally egoistic madness and panic mode. And then somewhere in September, people were like, okay, we want to continue having the planet as we have it, but we just want to figure out like now how we do it. I think that was a super interesting phase when we actually had like a second stage of climate where people realized that I would say also that climate is extremely compatible with business. But I think that was a huge shift for us when people like looked at it and said, hey, it's actually cheaper. Like, and I think that came from like, people saw that remote work wasn't like destroying the company culture. Remote work wasn't like, you know, whatever. And suddenly people were just, what? This isn't a bad idea. And then the same thing, people started connecting the dots. And I think that that was definitely like a second catch-up effect, I would say. Mm.
How much of that fund you already invested in new startups?
So we've done 22 companies. Wow. As a fund.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think that there's so many problems to be solved. So I think it's like there's so many exciting things that we work with. I mean, we do have done anything from like steel making to machine learning, design new crops to better ways of charging electrical fleets to increase the reusage of clothes to pension funds that are completely green to like vegan food products made out of like miracle materials that you can't even understand how great they are, to electrical coach companies, like bus companies that are completely electric, financing companies for people who help creating more solar projects. They're just like, if people ask us like, oh, what's the theme? The theme is like great climate problem, great founder. That's it. And people say, oh, it seems like you really like transportation. We're like, no, we have absolutely no opinion. We just want stuff that are very big climate problems, and then we're done.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we need. And like, of course, there's going to be one day when we say, oh, we've not done anything within, I don't know, some area. But it's so far it's been, no, if it's a if it's a great problem and it's a great founder, like, let's go.
Cool. The I was reading your website and got overwhelming view that you're really kind of climate optimist, I would say. Me, with a background of a few decades in journalism, you kind of become cynical in every single sector. So what is this optimism is based on?
Yeah. So I, to be very honest, I am a short-term optimist, long-term dystopian as a person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when I have a very, very, very hard time of seeing how we're going to meet any of the silly like degree targets that were like, and I think that the 1.5 degree target, 1 degree target, 2 degree, they're all great ideas. The problem is, I think that these targets, it's just stupid how it's done. I think it's horrible. I think that the joke, I think, in the climate industry is that, you know, I promise that in 2030, I will like completely have stopped eating blah, 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 and stuff like that. It's just like, but can you just stop, gambling now or whatever? It's like, yeah. Why do you promise that you're going in the future not do it? It's just, can you just not do it now would be a great idea, right?
Yeah.
And it's so silly. I think these goals are just becoming more and more ludicrous when it feels like if you actually believe this is true, just stop. It's just like, it's not harder than that, right? Mm. So I think that, I believe that we are changing we have a potential of transforming the planet. We have a potential of actually solving these problems. And I do really believe that. I think the problem is, I also do really believe actually the fact that entrepreneurship and like amazing people are doing so great things. I'm in shock towards some of the people we meet that they have thought so fundamentally about their own lives and what they're trying to change. Way more than I think that we sometimes have thought about it. This is the only thing we spend our time on level, right? Mm-hmm. So like, we're very, very impressed by them. And I think that gives me so much hope and energy when we feel like this will happen. Like, people are transforming it. What doesn't give me hope is whenever I talk in front of like a large audience of like sometimes governmental players, but even sometimes more is actually some of the like NGO players that are trying to handle this thing, because I just feel like some of them, I wonder, like, do you understand like that you need like 10 times the speed you're doing right now? And that makes me really, really angry when I feel like there are a lot of people who are, I don't know, they're mostly worried about keeping their jobs.
Mm.
And I think that's the worry. And I think they're not that interested in actually transformation. And I think that those are the ones that make me really worried. And I think that, I mean, I just recently spoke at an event about climate and it was like super, super, super great and everything. And then like looked at what they served and the food was absolutely not vegan, like not even vegetarian. It was like, let's just serve like cow milk and like some salami and stuff. And I was just like, this is crazy. And like, I always try to tell people, it's like, for me, climate is like, we have to start looking at it like child pornography, pedophilia, or child labor or something. Like, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I'm going to pitch you this great idea, like, this is, like, it's a carpet factory I'm running in Bangladesh and I'm giving all the kids mittens, and now like they're, because now it's great because they don't hurt their fingers so much anymore, and now it's great and actually it's really interesting because they actually can work slightly longer, so we actually get more revenue out of it, but it's like a double bottom line, like, you know, more profitable but also actually better for the kids. We all would be like, can you go, can you please leave this room? Like, I don't want to ever talk to you again. You're a horrible person. I'm going to call the police now. But what we're doing in climate is like, we're saying, oh, that's amazing. This is more profitable and it's better for climate. But then we look at it, it's like, but what you're saying is you're optimizing cows, or like you're, you know, it's like, can we just not eat cows instead?
Yep.
And I feel like it's as if people, like, they really do not want that. They just don't want to do that last part. They all want to just say, is it okay if we just do a bit? And then for me, it's like, a bit is like, would you say a bit within child pornography? Would you say a bit within like any of these? No, you wouldn't. Like, you would just say, no, please, we don't want at all, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing I think is so critical, to just have a stronger view on, no, please. I think one of the craziest thing I find is, like, if you're the CEO of an oil company today, you're getting a bigger bonus the more people you kill. If you're a CEO of a meat company, you get a bigger bonus the more you kill. If you and I went out in a city and put poison in the water, and people were starting to die from the poison slowly, right? Like, not some immediately, but some slowly, of pulmonary diseases over the years, we would go to jail for life, like the two of us, right? But if I'm the CEO of you know, the Totals and Exxons, whatever, and everybody knows that I'm killing the planet, you know, slowly, by, like, not only like pulmonary diseases of the exhausters, but also, like, you know, seawater rise and famines and everything, yeah, we're gonna get amazing bonuses, right? And like, whenever anybody, like, you know, and everybody says, like, hey, can you, like, how can you actually be the CEO of this oil company? But like, well, somebody has to do it, and we're the greenest oil company on the planet. I'd be like, yeah, we're the best child pornography company you could ever think about. I just feel like, no, please, like, we just have to say no.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one. Looking at your kind of portfolio of 20 plus investments, is any of them changing the world anytime soon?
Yeah, that's the joy for me. It's like, some of these companies are extremely deep sites. Like, some of them are like, we have one company which is like machine learning platform to design new crops. I mean, their target is now, their first crop is going to be in, I think it's going to be next year, actually, that it's going to start doing anything. But we're talking about like kilos volume, right? So like, climate change level the coming year. Yeah, probably like more net negative, because they flew twice to the US and stuff like that. So like, that's it. But like, if you look at the cumulative, like transformative of how we grow crops. But then, I mean, a lot of our companies are doing stuff now. Like, they're in the weeds. I mean, we have one company that reduces the risk of forest fires. And I mean, they're just now reducing the risk of forest fires. Yeah. It's like, they create like lots of telemetry and like planetary data, and so understand how the forest is growing, what's the interaction with the grid, giving a recommendation to utility companies, drastically reducing the risk of having these like electrical pulses between the grid and the forest. And that's something that's now. I mean, it's amazing. And I think that what we love is, like, we really love when the companies, I mean, they've, of course, they have a very strong climate ethos, right? Like, the founders want to do this. They're not going to go and sell to Total and do some, or I'm not going to say, oh, not only Total, like, there are a lot of companies that we don't want to like sell to. They should keep doing this thing and solving the problem. But one thing we love is, like, we love when they have a clear climate problem, like, from some. But the other thing we love is, like, jokingly, I usually say, we want the CFO at the customer to be a climate denier and still buy it. So the amazing thing with this company, like Overstory, they're in Netherlands and also remote, but it's really funny, because when they're selling to utility company, the utility company saving like 20 to like 30% of their maintenance cost of the grid, which is like, I mean, we're talking about like, you know, 20 to kind of hundreds of millions of euros per year, because like, these costs are crazy. And those are just cost savings. And then on top of that, they have like, you know, insurance risks and, you know, a lot of other small problems, or not big problems actually. But then on top of that, they also, of course, then reduce the risk of forest fire. And so it's so funny, because the CFO at one of the utilities, they can look at them and say, you're telling me I'm saving 25 million euros. Of course I'm going to use this. Like, because I'm not going to pay this company 25 million euros. So let's just go, right? And then for this, and then they can go home and tell their kids, oh, you know what dad or mom did, like, and say, oh, I'm just like helping the forest not to burn, right? And their kids can say, oh, you're so amazing. But at the end of the day, they don't care. They can turn over to their shoulders, like, I just like made us $25 million. Like, give me a better bonus, right? And those are our favorites, because then we don't need to battle if climate change is real or not. We can just say, no, this works. And we have like, there's a company, one we invested in Germany, called Betafish. And like, it's a tuna, quote unquote tuna, made out of seaweed. And it's completely crazy, because like, when we received this first, it's kind of canned tuna. And there are a couple of these products on the market, and most of them don't, they taste like cat food. So like, you preferably don't want to eat them. And like, you have to be like very fervent vegan to kind of even touch them. The crazy thing is, like, what happened to this company is, they said, when we were like talking to them, they said, we'll send you a couple of sandwiches, like these like triangle sandwiches, like you get with like tuna mayo and corn sandwiches. Got a pack of those. with a like a freezer thing, unpacked them. I took a first bite. I immediately spit it out. I was like, the motherfuckers. And my colleagues were like, and it's like, they've sent us tuna sandwiches. Like, this is tuna. And they're like, what? And then we all started open looking at this, like, is it tuna? And I was like, and then my co-founder, who's not vegan, took a bite. And he was like, no, but I don't think this, is this tuna? And I was like, took another bite. And I was like, are you, maybe this isn't tuna. What the heck? It's so close to tuna, right? And I think that that's when you realize that it's magical. Because the crazy thing is that, super cool, because seaweed sequesters solar carbon from the sky, increases that biodiversity in the ocean, creates amazing local jobs and communities that are depleted for a lot of reasons. And then for us humans, it contains full amino acids. It contains omega-3. That's how fish can have omega-3. They eat seaweed. So, and then it's not meat. So the crazy thing, it's healthier for you. It's healthier for our planet. It creates jobs. And there's only one party that doesn't like this, and that's the fisheries and tineries. So it's just like, oh my God. And if you start looking back, and that's the, usually I say, like, I like these climate first founders, because like, if you zoom out of how we today create tuna, we're driving around in the ocean with massive fossil fuel vehicles. Like think about your car, but times 10,000. Like, you're driving around and just complete the exhaust pipe, right? With a freezer, which is open. Like, every time you open your freezer, you feel slightly guilty because now, like, it's getting warm inside and you're, like, destroying the planet. These thing ships, they're running around with open freezers. They capture these beautiful ponies in the ocean, drag them out, hit them in the head and kill them, and throw them into this freezer. And it's just like, all of this just feels like, which century is this? And this company just says, not only do they say not that, but they also then suck down carbon from the sky and make your life healthier. And then when you eat it, you're like, how can it not be tuna? And then the crazy thing is, of course, how expensive is it to fish tuna in the sea versus growing seaweed where you know it is? So the crazy thing is, it's even cheaper than tuna.
Wow.
So then you realize, like, why don't we all do this? And I think that's my favorite. When you look at it and you just go, this is crazy, because this is just, there's nothing wrong with it. And there are so many of these companies where, like, when you see them, you're thinking, oh yeah, but there must be something which is harder. But then you look at it, no, it's just because the industry is stuck in something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize it's actually not, doesn't have to be harder. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's the thing that really impresses me. And like, we have a logistics company in London, Hyde, where like, they hire all the employees, all the drivers, they deliver the packages with like 15 minutes precision. It's completely green, like all green vehicles and all green transports. And they have better margins than all of the transportation companies. Wow. So then you just look at it, it's like, how can this work? And it's because, yeah, we did it 21st century style. Like, we use data, like, blah, 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 all these things. Of course they did, right?
Mm.
So, like, it's just so crazy when you see these companies, you're like, wow, you can actually change the world without having to kind of, you know, sacrifice everything. And I think that's the thing which makes me so happy. So I think that there's so, and every single sector has these things.
And also kind of gives ground to that optimism we talked earlier about, right?
Yes.
Exactly.
No, but I think that, and I think part of me is very optimistic, part of me is not optimistic. Mm. So I think that I get really, really not optimistic when I talk to like big government bodies who wants to change this super, super slowly. Then I just feel like, come on, can you please change it faster? But I get very optimistic when I talk to the people who are actually saying, no, I'm just going to do this now. Mm. I don't care. Like, I'm just going to do this now. I'm like, get out of the way.
Talking with financial sector people, often I come across with a topic of ESG investments.
Yeah.
What's your take on that? To me, it looks a little bit like greenwashing often. But
yeah. For me, it's like I mean, we are. I'm going to say stuff that my co-founders always say I can't say, but like, I'm not an ESG champ. Like, I think it's super irritating. We think so. Like, I'm going to moderate that answer before like everybody quotes me. Mm. I think that ESG is a great format to actually have checklists and think about things that you don't think about. Like, there's so many things where it's like, oh, have you thought about how this product is produced? And you're like, oh no, I've just thought about climate. I've actually thought about jobs. That's a good idea. Or have you actually thought about controls if this has geopolitical issues? Like, no, I haven't thought about it. Have you actually thought about diversity? And like, oh, that's a good point. So there's so many of these things that I think are really good lenses to act and like to think about. What I really dislike about it is that like, it's so easy to game. It's so easy to just like, I mean, whenever people like give me that slide of a startup and they have like 12 different SD, like, you know, sustainable development goal, like things and like these icons, I feel like, first of all, give me one icon that you're doing. And like, don't use this as like some kind of sprinkles on top of like, you know, Dutch sandwiches of chocolate. Just like, can you just tell me what you're doing and not saying you're increasing humanity's wealth and whatever. It's just like, can you just say like, one thing you're doing, please, because I don't believe that you're doing 9 great things on the planet. And then second, it's so easy to move around these things and like talk about it. So what we have, like we have an ESG scorecard that we really like, that we worked with quite a lot, which is qualitative. So like instead of just saying on a scale 1 to 10, how great are you? And people are like 10, and we're like, oh, that's great, we're done, right? We say, let's write a whole like article about it. Let's go and like, how are you planning on diversity? For example, looking at diversity policies, for example, looking at like ownership, for example, looking at management, for example, looking at equal pay. And like when people start asking this question, they're like, okay, we might not have an equal pay policy, but I mean, we're 50-50 split on gender and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, okay, good discussion. Let's start there. Mm. And that's like what I believe in it. And I think that I would want it to be much more. And also another problem is actually is like when we actually come in and create a framework, which is very hard, we're saying, okay, we come up with a very smart measurement framework, actually. Okay, that's great. And then we come in and we say, like, let's push this for early stage founders. We have these two people who are like, they have a, you know, three slides and they're two amazing founders and I want to start this great idea. We come in and we say, yeah, can we give us your like full lifetime life cycle analysis of this product? And they're like, well, no, yeah, then we can't do this. But they're like, what can you cut these people some slack? Because like, do you think it's a good idea or not idea? I think like we should put in some of these draconian measurement requirements. Yes, when they're raising like 50 million euros, yeah, they have money to have a sustainability team and a CFO who does this. But when they're two people in a shed and they're raising like 50,000 euros, cut these people some slack and just believe in them, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. So I think we try, like we have a full-time climate researcher. She's an IPCC contributor. So like we invest in it a lot, but we do not do like full like LCAs and stuff. We are more or less like, is this the best way we should make like cement? And then we're like, it looks like really directionally amazing. Is cement a big problem? Yes, it is. Is like, are these founders equipped to solve them? Yes. Okay, let's go. And then of course, slightly longer than I just said now. But like when we talk some of the funds and are some of the like the big banks and stuff, I just feel like, oh my God, like tell me if this is done before 2050.
Yeah, I have often the same question when they go into the details, how some companies are trying to do measurements of putting their, you know, Excel sheets numbers together and trying to find the small detail differences there. It's often becomes very rather crazy.
Yeah, and also I think the problem is also like the headache I also have is that we're like very, very hypocritical Buddhists that we're walking with a broom and saying I'm not allowed to kind of crush any single bug here, and you're doing it by while eating a McDonald's burger, and you're like, I think the burger is the problem, and you're like, no, I can't touch any of these spiders, and like you're eating an animal burger, that's the headache. And I think that there's so many things. I feel like whenever somebody is like a carbon accounting company and measurement company, and you ask them, okay, which are your customers, and they show you like 12 startup logos, and you're like, but these startup logos, they're just hosting on Amazon, right? Yeah, but we're measuring their Amazons. And they're like, that is okay. Have you looked at like heavy freight? Have you looked at textile industry? Oh, those are so complicated. We're like, yeah, but those are the ones that actually pollute. Like, I don't think this startup does anything. They send documents. It's like, so I think, and of course it looks great. You have like super cool logos, but like, can you go and actually do carbon accounting and measurement on like big, good and like, if you look at, for example, Sinai in the US, I love them. I think they're great. They do like complex, big like industries. If you have a textile plant, of course you want to improve it. Mm-hmm. Then if you talk to all the carbon accounting companies, they're not going to help you. But like you have these niche players that say, no, that's the what we do.
Exactly. And so, that's where you can actually have a big difference also.
Yeah.
What else I wanted to talk a little bit about? You said that in early 2020, people suddenly understood and kind of interest in the sector started to boom. How do you see it now? I mean, in Europe, being also placed between East and West a little bit, you know, one could wonder with a war going on and so on, does it have any impact on the climate sector?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, this is the cynical part of me that I'm not super proud of. But I would say, like, if you talk to a lot of governments in Europe, the last, like, you know, 12 months minus the last month, it's just like, hey, how are you thinking about getting rid of fossil fuel? And they were like, yeah, we're having this agenda, we're going like, you know, carbon zero. And like you talk to the Brits and like, yes, we're like 21,000 years in the future, we're gonna be carbon zero and it's gonna be great. And you're like, yeah, but have you looked at heat exchangers? And like, oh, that's on the agenda. And you just feel like, yeah, you're not gonna do it, right? And like the war in like Russia invading Ukraine and behaving like incredible, like what beyond belief that we thought, but I mean, Germany, you know, Netherlands, like UK, they're just like, holy crap, this is geopolitical risk. Like, get out of fossil fuel now. And I think that it's, for me, I become so cynical when like you see these politicians realizing that oh my God, this is a problem. And I was like, yes, it was a problem before, my friend. And I think that, so I always get really tired when people saying, like, for example, green jobs is another one, which is like people saying, oh, this is going to be great. You're going to create a lot of green jobs. I'm like, it's great at creating green jobs, but that's not what you're doing. So I think that, I mean, the same thing. It's like, I feel like so many companies, like especially American companies, are like home shoring jobs because they are like, they want, you know, Americans should be employed in the US. That's a super big thing for them. And of course, it's, you know, people should be employed. That's a good idea. But I think that some of these things they're doing right now are just like, they are bundling together like climate thing with the home shoring of jobs. And they know that like creating like, you know, 10,000 jobs in Georgia is what they're getting elected for. Nobody gives a flying fuck about climate. And I think that like sometimes you just feel like we're hiding, like we have been able to do these climate, like address some of the climate challenges for the last 10 years. I mean, or honestly, I think we've known about this problem for 40 years. I mean, even the oil companies have said it for 40 years. I mean, there's been studies for the last 30 that have been kind of conclusive, and the last 20, I think it's been silly to be against it. But I think now suddenly when people actually, it's their money or them getting reelected, then they go like, oh, we have to be independent from Russian oil, or we can like, you know, produce this product locally, and it's actually better for climate. Then I feel like, I mean, for me, all ways of going there are good, but there are many times I become very, very cynical and just get really irritated. So I think there are so many people that are they're driving the change and they're creating so many great opportunities, but I think it's about choosing. So I feel like there's essentially three bubbles. And I think that you have like technology, you have culture, and you have policy. And I think that technology enables anything. Like you can say, now we like men can give birth, or now you can like transport yourself in teleportation, whatever. And then you have policy, which essentially is just a lubrication vehicle. It's just like, should we make it easier or harder? It's very, very hard for policy to say that you can't do it, but like it can make it really nasty. Like even if you say you go to jail, it's like, it's very nasty, right? But then culture is the thing that says, is it reasonable? Should we do this? And for me, it's like, it's always technology enables, policy lubricates, but it's culture that decides. So the second people say, hey, I don't want to destroy the planet anymore, like it has to work, then you can actually look at all these solutions and click, 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 go do it, right? But I think the problem is like, we have to come in and say, like, climate first, like it has to be done without destroying the planet. And then you can look at the like the whole panoply of solutions, and then you can discuss and lubricate them, because it might be, okay, people want to change to heat pumps. People like want to be independent of Russian gas. People want to like have a like lower energy bill, and actually people want to do a less imprint of the climate. So like, okay, good. And then then technology, we have it. Oh my God, yes, we've had heat pumps for many long years, and they're really impressive and super amazing. And like now they're like machine learning in them, everything. They predict energy needs and temperatures. Great. So they're very expensive. Still, it's pretty nasty for people to like, you know, chug up with like whatever, 20 like 2,000 euros. So like, okay, the government's could just say, hey, let's lubricate it, right? And then the question is, how do the government lubricate it? Does the government lubricate it by like telling the banks, please lubricate it, and like we'll give you like green bonds in the background of the bank? Or does the government say, hey, we'll subsidize it, right? But things are the times where there's so many of these things where like we can just lubricate them to lower the threshold for corporates, for people. And then I think on the other hand, what governments should do is they should look at these things that are like that some of the climate shit people are doing should be moved away. Like there's so many things that corporates are doing that are really, really bad for climate. But right now corporates can do it as a quote unquote cost of doing business. So the easiest one to do an analogy of is actually looking at the pharmaceutical industry and looking at the opioid epidemic in the US. If you look at the opioid epidemic, I mean, a lot of people are extremely dependent on opioids, and like everybody knows it is really, really disastrous. And if you actually trace that and actually go trace the money, you find the Sachs family and like, sectors and the like the printing money on this, and it's really amazing for them. And when you hear interviews with them of like, oh, they got sued, like, no, $500 million for this, they are like, they admitted to this thing in Georgia, oh, they admitted to this thing, you know, another $200 million, that's crazy. How much money they made? So, whoa, my God, so they made like 20 times as much money per month as they got that. And then you actually hear them say it's a cost of doing business. And I think the rule we need to change is we need to change some of the climate crap from cost of doing business to go to jail. Because if you said, no, if you create an opioid epidemic, you go to jail, then I think that some of the people who are high up in these medical companies and advertisement companies and family offices that are behind these, and I mean, a lot of other things, right? They would just say, no. There's like, I'm not going to jail. I'm happy to like, you know, pay cost of doing business, like 20% or whatever, but I'm not going to jail. We have to get out of this. So what I would love governments to do right now, is I would love governments to say, you have to like solve this problem, and we have to decide how hard that solving is. And if you haven't done it, if you're the CEO of an oil company, you will go to jail 2030. But we're going to be super nice. We're not going to throw you to jail now, 2022. So we're just going to say for the coming years, there's just fines. And the fines are going to increase in the scale. But 2030, you'll go to jail. So you go to jail, your biggest shareholders go to jail, your board goes to jail. Let's just go that. And like every single boardroom, every single like shareholder meeting, people will say, I'm sorry, like we have 8 more years. I'm going to sell all of my stock in this company unless you fix this problem, because I'm not going to jail, right? And the board is just like, hey, I have to leave this board unless you have a plan. And the CEO will say, I'm not going to stay in this job unless we have a plan, right? So then all these companies, and we can give them like grace periods. We can say like, whatever, 20 years for some of these companies, right? But I think they're just like saying, no, there's a point where you go to jail for killing people, because that's what we do when people poison the water.
Exactly.
We don't say, oh, there's a grace period. It's like, no, you kill people, you go to jail.
Simple. How could we push it forward? I mean, who do we need to speak to actually make this happen?
For me, it is that triangle. It is like, we need to get the people in technology to say, hey, create solutions. Like, create solutions and realize that you won't be able to run the show, because the technologies shouldn't run the show. I think that whenever technologists and capitalists ran the show, we essentially got colonization. If you look at the East India Company, it was like an amazing effort for Britain to colonize, India, and like behave like total assholes. And it was done in essentially the name of technology and capitalism. And that's when it just goes free roaming and decides to run their own countries. I think the way to do it is like, we'll say, no. Enable things, make it possible, make it easy. And then, and I think that's already happening, but we should tell everybody who's in technology, if you're working today on an advertisement company, leave that company and go start a climate company. I think that you can definitely do something. And then I think we should tell everybody in policy, it's like, I think you can be more draconian. I think you can actually say, we want this change faster. And you can actually say, we will go from fines to jail on some of these things. And then I think that the third one is on people and culture. We can just say, don't accept mittens on child laborers. Like, ask yourself, is this actually the way to do it? And there's so many scandals when it's been solved the capitalistic way, when it's actually solved, like all these three bubbles have collaborated. So it's really important to go deep. So one thing to think about is, for example, you have the dolphin-free tuna scandal. And I think that that's just such a crisis. There's like some super smart people have written about this. But it's that when dolphin-free tuna, this was like in the 90s, where essentially it was realized that, okay, when we're catching tuna, we're also catching dolphins in the same net. And for some really strange reason, people really care about dolphins and not tuna. One is a mammal and one is not. So anyways, back then that made sense. Back now, I don't think it makes sense anymore. But back then they said, hey, I'm fine with eating tuna, but I'm not fine with eating dolphin. So what happened is a lot of people started protesting, and essentially like Occupy Wall Street level. People were like, no, stop this. Walk around with like pickets, like, we're going to stop this, right? And like CEOs and everybody got pressured. And then the like capitalism solution was like, okay, create new nets and create like a dolphin-free tuna brand. Oh, not brand, but like, on the tin, you get like dolphin-free tuna label. Created, sticker, it's done, right? And now the problem is like everybody who is now protesting, they just go to Walmart's, Whole Foods, Sainsbury's, whatever food store you're in, Etika, and they go and buy the dolphin-free tuna. Everybody who's angry, you just buy the one which is like 10 cents more expensive, and you like all guilt is gone. You don't have to pay the Catholic Church any like indulgence letters. You're fine. 95% of people will, of course, still choose the same crap tuna. So the problem is like by not actually going in with legislation saying, no, we're not going to have child labor mittens here. By letting capitalism and technology solve it together with culture, completely uncontrolled, made that 90% did not solve the problem. So the problem is like we have to go in and say, no, we don't want any tuna like killed, like we don't want any dolphins killed with tuna. And I mean, now when I'm saying this 2021, it sounds completely ludicrous. Well, why the heck? Why do we want any, like, why do we care the difference between dolphin and tuna? Don't kill animals and eat them, right? But I think that that's the way we should approach some of these problems, saying, no, I'm not after that best child labor camp. I'm after no child labor. And I think that that's a requirement you can actually ask. You can ask, like when you're flying, when you're booking a ticket, like you're flying, whatever, Amsterdam, Berlin, you can say, so the thing, I can check in a box here and pay like 100 euros for like biofuel. Is that like, actually means that I'm not generating any pollution, or is this a way for like Lufthansa to like pocket another 80 euros and then like flush 20 euros some like carbon accounting way, which is shit, right? Is this some like scammy offsets? And I think we should just do this with all of these things. And I think we should say, no, none, okay? None. And I think that's the requirement to do. And I think that also we shouldn't force consumers to say you have to live in the 17th century. Like if people say, no, the only way to live, like you live in a cabin, no electricity, you know, gather your own food. Yeah, but then the problem is the planet works for like, I mean, we can be a billion people. So then we just have to kill, you know, 9 out of 10 people on the planet. And that's not going to work, right? So we have to like be realistic and say, no, we're going to be like 10 billion people. But we also have to handle this. So I think that like we have to go in with open eyes. And I think that's what has to be done.
Cool. I think that's a good point to kind of wrap the discussion. Thanks, Hampus, for your really kind of, how would I put it nicely, interesting view on the how to change problems. And thanks for your optimism. I think that's always needed on this topic.
I'm trying.
We're all trying.
Thanks for doing this, Tormo. Thanks. This is great. It's great you're doing it. And I think it's great to get, like, to ask these questions. So thanks a lot for doing it.
Thanks, Hampus. Join us again for the next episode. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, please give us a good rating and leave the feedback in your podcast player so others will find it too. We will be back next week. Turn on to Nature-Backed Podcast.
I'm DC. I host the rock podcast, Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interviews.
Electric Acid.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electricast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electricast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electricast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electricast. Trick out.